Hey, scaredy cats. When I was a kid, it became a tradition for my younger brothers and I to have a bit of a slumber party on Christmas Eve. We would all sleep in the same room. One of us would have the bed, the other two would sleep on the floor, and we would stay up late. Inevitably, one of our parents would have to come in and tell us to go to sleep. Sounds pretty cute. Innocuous, right? Well, there was a bit more of a sinister slant to it. My one brother, I won't name him here, was terrified of Christmas Eve and jolly old St. Nick specifically entering the house. So his solution was safety in numbers. We used to tease him, but after seeing the movie we're about to talk about, he may have been onto something. If you're a horror fan, you know that Santa isn't always a benevolent bestower of gifts. Sometimes Santa is just plain evil. It's time to travel far north to Lapland and meet a young boy as he battles elves, thwarts Santa, and becomes a legit Finnish action hero as we chat about Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale. Collectively, they're part of the Werewolf Squad. Official badges on the way, by the way. But individually, you know them as Brian and Jessica. Hey, folks. Thanks for coming on today to get frightfully festive. That's so cheesy. I can't believe I wrote that.
No, I love it. I love alliteration. But yay. Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be back reunited with the Werewolf Squad. Can't wait for our like bowling shirts.
Yes. Oh, bowling shirts. Yes. Like in the Golden Girls.
Yes. Exactly.
I was thinking The Simpsons, the Pin Pal episodes, but that's
that's my second one. Yeah.
So you've both been really busy since we last spoke, but what have you been up to?
As I sigh heavily, I have been, you know, editing over at FilmCred. I've been writing a lot. I've had a couple of new bylines, which is super exciting. And I've got a lot of podcasts this month, but which I love because I think anybody who follows me on Twitter knows I'm always like, hey, have me on your podcast. So I'm having a lot of fun with it. So lots of fun things. Very busy, but lots of very fun things.
Awesome. And you're in a book.
I am. Hear Us Scream, The Voices of Horror. I contributed a chapter based on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is also very exciting. And we just passed 100 book sales, which I never thought anybody would buy this book except the people who wrote for it. So I'm super excited that people are picking it up.
That's awesome. It's on Amazon. Wonderful. Like, that's fantastic.
I know, right?
Yeah. I hope that I can see something in print of mine sometime too. That's just so cool. This is so cool.
You definitely will.
Well, we'll see. Anyway, for me, it's been kind of the same boat, you know, writing a lot, trying to keep my head above water over the past couple weeks of school here, you know, as things get wild and crazy there, and recording a lot. I've been doing some stuff with not only my own podcast with Movies for Life, but also joining sort of a rotating crew over at Pod and the Pendulum, which is where I kind of got my podcasting start. And so it's nice that Mike asked me if I'd like to join in, you know, once in a while over there too. So that's fun to do. And boy, writing. And I have one new byline that I'm finishing the article up for tonight. And so I can send it off. And but otherwise, you know, still just plugging away at Bloody Disgusting and Manor Vellum.
Fantastic. So I'm going to put you both on the spot here a little bit. And I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this question. But if you had to pick one or two Christmas movies, and they don't have to be horror, but Christmas movies that you have to watch every year, what would they be?
It's a Wonderful Life is my number one. Sorry, I looked like I sort of just jumped in there, but that's my immediate answer.
That's okay.
But a new favorite for me just within the past few years, and it is a horror film, kind of, sort of, I think it really, it is and it isn't, is Christmas Evil from 1981.
Yes.
Which is just a brilliant movie. I think that that movie is sort of, for me, it's sort of the ultimate killer Santa Claus movie. And it really is a character study. And it has just this sort of crazy magical ending, you know, that I don't know if I entirely know what to make of, but I just adore that film. But yeah, It's a Wonderful Life and Christmas Evil. That's quite a double feature, but,
it really is.
But those are the ones for me.
Very nice.
One of mine is the original Black Christmas. Of course, I think that was the very first movie I did on Scaredy Cats.
It was.
Yeah. Very right. fond memory. That was so much fun. So yeah, absolutely. I think that is not only one of the best Christmas movies ever made, one of the best horror movies ever made, and possibly one of just the best movies ever made. I'm obsessed with Black Christmas. And also, I have a tradition of watching Love Actually with my mom every year. We actually just did it like a few hours ago because she was like, we have to watch it this year. And I was like, okay, let's do it. So
it gets a lot of hate, but I'm with you. Like, it is one of those movies that I'm like, yep, I'm an unabashed fan of Love Actually.
Right. Yeah. Like, when people tell me their issues with it, I'm like, yes, that is totally fair. Mm-hmm. But I also love it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you. We used to watch that one every Christmas Eve. We would watch Love Actually and usually something else. Now it's a Wonderful Life and White Christmas are kind of the ones that my wife and I watch together. And you know, just kind of get the warm fuzzies, but they also kind of go to dark places too. And, you know, and I think some of the best Christmas movies do kind of at least dabble in the darkness a little bit.
Exactly. Absolutely. Like this film we're going to be talking about, there are really dark origins to Christmas and the folklore that we associate with it. So I love, like you say, even the ones that have like the warm fuzzies and make you feel good and make you, you know, it's all about love and family, but it's also about loneliness and regret and all these dark places. And I just love it. So I like that. I think that's one reason Christmas horror resonates so much. Because it's not afraid of saying, yeah, Christmas is a sad, scary time for some people. So
absolutely. I would say that all four of those movies make my like yearly watch list. I have a long list of Christmas movies that I have to watch. White Christmas is one of them because that's the movie that my mom and I watched every year since I can remember. Like we would watch it. And every once in a while, we would also watch it in July and just be like, we're going to just watch White Christmas in the middle of the summer when it's hot, nasty out. And just, you know, think about snow. And I was going to sing, but nobody wants me to sing. So. Awesome. All right. Well, the Letterboxd summary, it's a long one. It's the eve of Christmas in northern Finland, and an archaeological dig has just unearthed the real Santa Claus. But this particular Santa isn't the one you want coming to town. When all the local children begin mysteriously disappearing, and I'm going to butcher these Finnish names, and I am so sorry if you are Finnish and I am butchering names. Pietari and his father, Reino, a reindeer hunter by trade, capture the mythological being and attempt to sell Santa to the misguided leader of the multinational corporation sponsoring the dig. Santa's elves, however, will stop at nothing to free their fearless leader from captivity. That's a really long synopsis, and I feel like it's not 100% accurate.
No, it's good. No. Kind of, sort of, yeah.
The film is based on the 2003 short film Rare Exports, Inc., and its 2005 sequel, Rare Exports, The Official Safety Instructions, by Helmari Hellander and Juuso Hellander, brothers, both of which involve a company that basically traps wild Santa Clauses and trains them and exports them to locations around the world. Jessica, this was your first time seeing this movie, right?
It was, yeah. I saw it for the first time last night, actually.
Excellent. And what did you think? So obviously we're going to talk more about it, but
right.
a brief like reaction.
I loved it. It was, I think I tweeted this out. It's like The Thing meets Dial Code Santa Claus, but funny. Which is just the wildest thing you could ever come up with, and I'm obsessed with it. I loved this movie.
Excellent. And Brian, do you remember when you first saw it?
I do, in fact. I watched it last year for the first time thinking, hey, this movie came out in 2010, and wow, it's a 10-year anniversary. Maybe I should watch it and see if I can write about it. That's my dirty little secret, is I watched it to see if I could squeeze a pitch out of it, okay? But I ended up loving it and thinking, yeah, I can definitely write a pitch on this one. And I did, and it was accepted, and I wrote the article. So that is what that's my brilliant. That's my dirty little secret about rare exports. But hey, whoever's listening now knows, but hey, that's okay. That's okay. It's was just a tremendous discovery though, to finally see, cause I had heard about it for years, even from people who weren't really into horror. They were like, Brian, you like horror? Yeah. You should see this movie. You'll like it. And I was like, oh, okay. Cause it's like, isn't it some sort of killer Santa Claus thing? And they went, kinda. And I was like, oh, okay. Cause I assumed it was just another, you know, like Silent Night, Deadly Night rehash or something like that. It is not anything in any way like that. So I just, was, wow, this movie is innovative and wild and crazy and funny and just kind of this perfect little gem of a movie. So
absolutely. I think actually, and I've referenced it before, I'm pretty sure you recommended it to me last year. Like, I think I said something on Twitter about like, you know, looking for a Christmas movie to watch, and I'm pretty sure you recommended it. So
yeah, I loved it. It was one that I remember that because this was just like an instantly, one of those movies that just instantly was like, I this is going to be one that I visit every year in all probability. And so far that's true. You know, it's only been two, but very true. And I may watch it again before Christmas this week as well, just because it's so much fun and so entertaining.
It really is. So there's not a lot of information about the movie online. So we're really going to get pretty much right into the meat and potatoes of the movie, I suppose. Except that it does star a father and son duo as father and son. Jorma and Oni Tomala play Pietari and his dad. The cinematography, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, so I just need to give a shout out to Mika Orisma, because the cinematography in this movie is incredible. Like, the landscape shots are just absolutely stunning. So I just wanted to shout that out. I don't usually mention cinematographers, so that's something I need to change, because they deserve a lot of credit. The budget was 1.8 million euros, and box office was $4,015,133. And it was released on September 24th, 2010 at Fantastic Fest, and on December 3rd, 2010 in Finland. So just in time for Christmas. It did get some pretty good reviews. So Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars and called it a rather brilliant lump of coal for your stocking. He also referenced The Thing and said it is an R-rated Santa Claus origin story crossed with The Thing. It is a superior horror film, a spot-on parody of movies about dead beings brought back to life. Kim Newman gave it 4 out of 5 stars and praised its very black humor and strange mix of revisionist mythology, gruesome horror, and authentic Christmas spirit. It has a gritty, outdoorsy feel appropriate to an exploration of the brutal side of a harsh all-male life in an extreme climate. And I don't think, and now that I'm thinking about it, you don't really see any women. I think at one point you see them in a tent, like kind of off to the side, but you don't, and I'm not even sure because they're all bundled up. They might not be women, but it is a very masculine movie.
Yeah, like The Thing, you know, it has that, that sensibility to it. I also think, when I think of this though, I think more of the children, I guess, than the men, you know, running around. Whereas The Thing, it's like, these are men, you know, trapped together in this place. Whereas here it's, I think about, you know, the kids, you know, particularly, gosh, the names, Pieter and his friend, Giusso, you know, Pietari, I'm sorry, and his friend Giusso, you know, I'm going to butcher the names even worse. So anyway.
In my original notes, I had dad one and dad two, so that I wouldn't have to try and butcher their names. And I was like, no, you have to refer to them by name.
Yeah.
So we open in an office, and some folks have basically been drilling into a mountain. And one of the workers, Mr. Green, is explaining to another man, this man is Riley, that they have found some kind of anomaly. So they found sawdust, a lot of sawdust, 65 feet thick, to be precise. It's kind of weird. But Riley's like, no, it's just a giant icebox. What does he think they're storing? Like, does he know that it, like, I'm assuming he's there specifically for Santa, but what is he telling these people to get them to drill into this? And then be like, oh yeah, that's fine. It's just an icebox.
I don't know if he's telling them anything. He's just saying, just drill, just do your job or you're out of one, you know, I think is probably what he's telling them. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Riley is very much like, he wants to set this all free. Why exactly is a little bit hard to say. I
don't think he's done as much research as Pietari has.
You're right.
Right? Like, he clearly knows, I mean, we'll get to this, but he clearly knows when he hands out the rules that, you know, if you slip up even one little bit, you're dead. So why is he so eager? I mean, you could ask that of a lot of horror movies. Why are they so eager to unleash this horror? But it does make you wonder, what did he think was going to happen?
Yeah,
it's a little bit like,
exactly.
You know, why do you climb a mountain? Because it's there. He seems like one of those kind of guys, you know?
Exactly.
I need to make this discovery, you know, even if it's going to be harmful to everybody.
He probably thinks he's like, I'm going to be immune because I'm like, I'm going to be the one that frees this creature. So I'll be safe.
It's a little bit of the Dr. Frankenstein hubris, you know,
just
the discovery of it all is worth, you know, any dangers or risks that may befall.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And so the rules are like, make sure you wash behind your ears. Don't smoke. Don't swear. They're definitely not rules that have anything to do with mining safety. And Mr. Green is definitely like, what? Like, these are hilarious. Like, he doesn't take them very seriously, which doesn't work out so well for him. Outside, we have two young boys, Pietari and his friend Yuso, who are watching the proceedings from behind a whole lot of crated explosives. There's just a whole bunch of dynamite. So the drilling team has found something embedded in the ice. And Riley holds this cylinder of ice like a baby. Like, he's like cradling it in his arms. And he's like, always believe, always. And we get this sun setting beautifully behind him. This guy knows how to set a scene. Like, he is standing on top of the mountain, the sun's setting. It's gorgeous. And he's telling the workers standing below him that he is about to achieve his childhood dream. That was not my childhood dream. I don't know what you dreamt about when you were a kid. But unleashing Santa, an evil Santa on the world.
Well, he doesn't. Maybe his childhood dream was finding Santa Claus, thinking it was, you know, the Santa Claus that we know from Coca-Cola and, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, et cetera, et cetera. And, over time, discovering that, you know, as he got older and more hardened and whatever else people, as we know, people often become as they grow older, right? Just discovering the truth, but being like, the obsession has already gotten to a point where I'm going to do this anyway, you know, even if it means danger and destruction.
Yeah, because so many horror movies with killer Santas are about the trauma of finding out that Santa Claus is not real.
Right.
But this takes it a step further by saying Santa Claus used to be real, and I'm going to go find the real one. Like, taking that trauma of finding out that it's your dad's friend dressed up as Santa who's bringing you presents, and turning it into this twisted mission to go blow up a mountain and dig out a gigantic evil elf. You know, but I think that's so interesting. It's such an interesting play on the killer Santa idea, like taking that trauma and taking it to the absolute extreme.
Yeah.
This mountain, in fact, is a burial mound. And according to Riley, he says, this is a sacred place. It took the Sami people of Lapland centuries to build it. But the excavation team has 24 days to open it.
They also have a lot more dynamite than
and the Sami people. That's very true.
That Chekhov's dynamite that the children were like playing near and leaning up against. I wondered the whole movie if they were really going to kill some kids, because I always kind of respect horror movies that do that. and with them just kind of chilling against the dynamite, yeah. I was like, God, are they just going to blow up in the first frame? This is amazing.
I know, it's true. Like, a lot of horror movies shy away from killing kids, mm-hmm. but when they go that far, you're like, whoa, like, did that really just happen?
Right. Yeah. That's I always respect people who do that. I mean, I'm sure there are some movies out there that do it that I would not respect them for it, but I'm just like, they really went there. Good for them.
Our Christmas story is starting essentially with a little old fashioned grave robbing. Nothing more festive than that. there's another link to Frankenstein. Look.
Oh, there you go. There you go. I was thinking The Mummy.
Oh, that works too. The boys realize that these men are actually going to blow up the mountain. And this mountain is actually called Korventunturi, which means ear mountain, apparently, in Finnish. Because it looks like an ear on one face. And according to Finnish folklore, this is actually where Father Christmas had his workshop, staffed by elves. And that's how he could hear who made the naughty list and who made the nice list because of the shape of the mountain.
That's great. I love that.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's some of these things that, you know, as an American or, you know, someone who's not Finnish is not going to get, you know, and just sort of those cultural touchstones that just give it that much more depth. I love that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic to know.
There's actually a website called santaclausfinland.fi, and there is all kinds of information about Santa Claus in Finland. They have like pictures of their elves, and they're definitely different elves than what we see in this movie, but they talk a lot about this mountain in particular and how the elves live there with him. They are expert meteorologists. They analyze the weather patterns. They study foreign languages so that they can, like, you know what boys and girls around the world are wishing for. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Pietari is the one that thinks that Santa is buried there. And considering that Finnish folklore is that this is where Santa's workshop would be, it makes sense that he thinks that Santa is buried there. But Juuso is the jaded kid who no longer believes in Santa. And you can bet he is ready to ruin his friend's belief as well. This is my embarrassing admission. I believed in Santa Claus until I was 12 years old.
That's awesome, though. I love that.
You know, my son's 11. My youngest is 11. And he's questioning, but he still is just holding on, you know. So I respect that. We're not like gonna dash their their belief. So we just kind of let them figure it out. You know,
parents said the same thing. They're like, I'm not gonna take that away from you.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty sure there's probably not, but kind of just in case. You know, I think is where he's like, at, and which is like, I'm okay with that, you know. It's not hurting anybody.
I found out in French class, and I had a bunch of because in Canadian schools you have to take French class right up until grade 8, and then you have to take it a couple of classes in high school as well. But I had some people basically making fun of me, and my French teacher, who I will cherish to the day I die, Mr. Casella, stuck up for me and was like, I still believe in Santa Claus. And that shut them right down. So Pietari's faith, however, despite Juuso trying to convince him that he's kind of being silly, is pretty unbreakable. So he goes home and he hits the books. He's reading books like The Truth About Santa Claus. And the illustrations in these books that he is looking at, and he has like stacks of books.
They are terrifying.
They're sinister.
Yeah.
How old do you think these boys are in this movie?
Oh, man. I was guessing somewhere in around 10 for Pietari. And I don't know. Juuso seems like he's maybe a little older, maybe 12, 13, 14. Yeah. So.
There's that illustration that shows Santa sitting on a pile of skulls. Mm-hmm. Santa holding a kid in a cauldron is my particular favorite. We see one of Santa with a goat head, which mm-hmm. references the Finnish Christmas figure Yulepuki, aka the Yule goat.
Yeah.
It was originally a pagan tradition, but it may also be the Yulepuki could be a man turned into a goat man on Christmas Eve. And in some parts of Finland, the custom persists. People wearing a goat costume perform in return for leftover Christmas food. A lot of my research was Santa based. So
that's great.
So Yulepuki receives over 500,000 letters from over 200 countries every year, mostly from China, Poland, and Italy. One of the things I think this movie does really well is depict the gorgeous Nordic winter. Like Pietari is doing his research. There's that frost on the glass. Like, and there's just like a very small part of clear glass. It's just gorgeous. And it makes you want to stay inside and be cozy mm-hmm. and wear your sweater and underwear and socks.
Not run outside in your underwear.
No. I was like, these Finnish kids are built different, running out yeah. in their underwear.
It's so funny because he's dressed so full on top and then, you know, he's wearing boots and his underwear and nothing else. It's just so funny. I just.
But I think he, like, you know, there are those kids that are just like those weird kids. And I was one of those weird kids. But like, he's just that adorable weird kid that you're like, you're such a unique little creature. And yeah, he's adorable. He's absolutely adorable. Mm-hmm. We're one day from Christmas. His dad is making a trap in a hole in the ground filled with these vicious DIY spikes, which we later learn this is a wolf trap. They live on a very rural property. They're in the shadow of the mountain. Pietari stays up very late. He's deep in his studies, but he falls asleep surrounded by his books and his drawings. He's then kind of rudely woken by his dad, and he scolds his stuffed creature. What is that supposed to be?
You got me. I'm not really sure what that is. It's just sort of a stuffed animal thing that he has.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I can't tell if it used to be something recognizable and it got loved to the point where you can't even tell what it is anymore, or if it's just, it was always kind of
like. It's just this brown, fluffy thing, and he carries it everywhere with him. He talks to it all the time. Mm-hmm. You're right. He loves it very much. Like, you can tell that he just loves this creature. And he sees footsteps outside in the snow on the roof of what I guess is kind of like their mudroom. And he's a little startled because one of the illustrations that he saw in his books was of Santa walking barefoot in the snow. And these are definitely not boot prints. These are like bare footprints. Mm-hmm. He also notices that the Christmas lights have been unplugged, which we later learn that his dad unplugged them because he's like, well, who's going to see them anyways? Which dad is clearly missing the point here. He goes to his dad's shed. He doesn't even want to go in when his dad's like, you shouldn't be out there alone because of the wolves. Always comes back to wolves with you two, I swear. However, I wouldn't want to go into the shed, which turns out to not be so much of a shed as an abattoir or we'll later learn, a reindeer slaughterhouse. Yeah.
Is that where he's slaughtering the pig at that point, right?
He's slaughtering the pig, yes. Yeah, yeah. He comes in and he has his eyes closed the whole time he is in there. He doesn't want to see any of this. And his dad's like, we're going to the roundup, so you better go get dressed. And that landscape as they drive on their snowmobile to the roundup, it's stunning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get the feeling, and I mean, maybe this is just me, I kind of felt like his dad was a little bit embarrassed by him at first. Like, he's kind of an odd kid, as we talked about, which adds to his charm, but he's not like Yuso, who is clearly like, Yuso is used to hunting and he's a tougher, rough and tumble kid. Like, you even see like poor Pietari gets knocked down by the gate when they get to the roundup. And his dad just has this look on his face, like when he's like, take off your goggles, like, what are you doing? Like, he just looks slightly embarrassed by him. But I don't know. That's what I got. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he doesn't think he's tough enough. Like, you get the impression that Pietari was really close with his mom, but then his mom died and his dad is kind of at a loss as how to talk to him or how to deal with him. Yep. Because he's like, oh, you're not a man. and which kind of comes back later at the very end when he tells him, you know, you're quite a man. I made that sound flirtatious. I don't know why.
No, it's true. You're absolutely straight on, right on.
Yeah. I just, he lost his mom and the dynamic totally shifted and they just don't know how to relate to each other.
Mm-hmm. And you see that or like later on Christmas morning, right? When he comes down and they're, and I think it even happens maybe on Christmas Eve, like they're trying to talk to each other and they just can't communicate. They can't seem to make that connection. And they're not through want of trying, like they both clearly want to connect with each other. And his dad looks heartbroken at one point. And yeah, it's like this very touching relationship that you just kind of see develop throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually probably, you know, I'm a sucker for, you know, sort of father and child stories because, well, probably for obvious reasons, you know. I think that's one of the reasons why I like this one as much as I do is that sort of warm heart that's at the center of this sort of cold and creepy, scary kind of movie is this wonderful growth of a story of a bond between a father and son, you know, that is like, I experienced this myself. It's like, I don't know how to relate to my kid, you know, for whatever period of time. They're just interested in different things. I don't know what bond I'm going to have. Then all of a sudden you just find something and it just draws you together and it's a beautiful thing, you know. I've experienced that personally, you know, with my own kids. You know, my youngest son, I for a while there I was like, how do I relate to him? I mean, he's into sports and things like that and I want to support him in that, but you know, I don't know how to relate to that stuff. And then all of a sudden he was like, Dad, I really want to watch Halloween. Okay.
This I know.
Yeah. So, you know, he and I are, you know, we have the horror bond, you know, so I mean, that's just one of those kinds of things. So I don't know, stories like this. I'm a sucker for them. I'll admit it. They just really get to me.
I'm not a parent, so, but I love stories where the kid is the only one who knows what's going on. Like the youngest cast member, the youngest character is the only one who knows the truth. And, you know, it can be frustrating for me to watch and see people dismiss him over and over when there's a flashing neon sign that says evil Santas are in your town and they're taking over and they're like, oh no, it's just wolves. But, but no, I love it when the kid is right. And when the kid wins everybody over with their knowledge and their ingenuity and their cleverness. And like, it's just, it's so triumphant at the end and so kind of cathartic to be like, ha, yes, everyone believes him now. I love stories like that.
Yeah, agreed.
The roundup is this whole production. There's tents, there's an electrified fence, which we learn is to keep the wolves away, and whole families, it seems, there for the big event. So this is the one part where I think you might see some women off in the distance, but I'm not 100% positive. But this is really where we see the difference between Pietari and his friend Yuso. As Yuso approaches them, he's got a cigarette dangling from his mouth. He's asking for a light. Now, Pietari's dad is still like, get out of here. Like, what are you doing? But he's very comfortable carrying his gun. And whereas Pietari is armed, but Yuso is like, do you even know what to do with that? Mm-hmm. Yuso then jokes about shooting Santa Claus. So he's clearly like, he's smoking. He's joking about shooting Santa Claus. He is making the naughty list.
He's on the naughty list for sure. Yes.
This roundup that they're at, well, it's a reindeer roundup for meat. And this made me think of Krampus when Howard talks about reindeer meat and Tom, played by Adam Scott, is like, at this time of year, we refer to reindeer as a transportation system for Santa. That's all I could think about. But Yuso says there's something wrong when they see these two skinny reindeer come over the horizon. So they all hop on their snowmobiles to find a field of dead reindeer. And there are over 400 dead reindeer in this field. Mm-hmm. And they're not just dead, they've been slaughtered basically at the entrance to the excavation site, only they think it is a Russian research site. They're also convinced that it was wolves that were riled up by this blasting. And the men notice a hole in the fence, which is how Pietari and Yuso got up on the mountain, but they're, of course, like staying mum. They do not want to get in trouble from their dads. But these men are furious with the Russians who are working on the mountain. So this takes place right on the Russian-Finnish border. As one of them actually makes, he makes reference to what he would do if it weren't for that border. They then speculate that the workers must have left the mountain because they haven't heard any noise coming from it in a few days. Well, that's just ominous. Yeah. You find a field of dead reindeer. You haven't heard any noise coming from the, and not, like I said, not just dead reindeer. Like, these are bloody, gutted reindeer. And then you haven't heard any noise coming from this mining or excavation site in a few days. I'd be a little suspicious and maybe heading back to town.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It would not have taken me nearly as long as it took them to jump to evil Santa's on the loose. like the signs are there.
Right. Well,
and then Pietari, even, you know, he picks up sort of the side, he sees, you know, the bear footprint, the human footprint in the snow, and that's, but he kind of hides it. He doesn't let the adults in on that either. Mm-hmm. So, because he figures he won't be believed, I'm sure.
They do the math. They realize that with over 400 dead reindeer, they've lost around $85,000, which is a lot of money. Like, I'm guessing that's make or break money for these people. Like, they're going to be bankrupt without this money.
Oh, yeah.
Pietari's dad is angry, and he shoots open the gate. He is ready to go and confront the men working on the mountain. He's like, I don't even care if they have armed guards on site. And as they head up the mountain, it gets darker. A little side note, in December, northern Finland never actually sees true daylight, so they're doing all of this in what's known as civil twilight. The things that I learn doing research about horror movies,
I'm impressed.
I didn't know there were three stages of twilight. I said that to my partner, and he was like, "Yeah, there's like new moon and eclipse." And I was like, "Wow, did you really just reference the Twilight series?" Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man.
I actually looked up, because I'm a nerd, the sun graph for Lapland in December. And it would be probably around civil twilight at this point, which is when it's not quite dark. You can still see. There's still quite a bit of sunlight. Then there's nautical twilight and astronomical twilight. Who knew?
So I will say, if you had like all the elves playing baseball with Muse playing in the background, that would have made this movie go from like a 10 to an 11 for me. If you have like an elf baseball scene, perfect.
Oh, right. Maybe in the sequel.
Yeah.
When they're naked, right?
Scene, I love it.
Oh, absolutely. It had to be.
Okay. Oh, okay. God. Good. Yeah. Just making sure. I figured that was probably the case, but you know, hey, just making sure.
Yes, that is mandatory.
So they arrive at the station to find it completely abandoned. It appears that the excavation team has left in a hurry because the door to the office has been left open. There's snow and ice covering the desks. Pietari tells his stuffy they found him while the men head back outside. And this is when they discover that they were lied to. These men weren't seismic researchers. They were excavating something, and there is this massive pit in the ground. So Pietari's dad throws a flare down into it, but it doesn't help because the hole is just too deep. Efforts thwarted, everyone heads back home. Pietari, for the second time this far, I didn't mention this earlier, he tries to secure the 24th spot on his advent calendar. The first time he taped it, this time he resorts to stapling it. Does he think that if he does that, he's going to be protected from Santa?
Maybe. I mean, that's kid logic for you. Like, if we don't get to Christmas, then Santa can't get to us. So I don't know.
Yeah, I that's kind of my take on it too, is he's just like, you know, if I can do anything to hold this back, I will. Mm-hmm. And even if it's a piece of paper and some staples, you know, and that's it, you know.
Yusso is at Pietari's house and he's wondering what he's doing before Pietari hands him some tape and what looks like a piece of cardboard to, as he says, tape to your bum. And Pietari's also preparing himself. He has hockey pads on. He has a helmet. I am ashamed to admit as a Canadian that at first I was like, is he wearing a life jacket? And then I was like, oh, those are hockey pads. Yeah. I have to hand in my citizenship.
It's like even I knew they were hockey pads.
I know. I was like, is that an old-fashioned like life jacket? No. Hockey pads, Sherry.
But what cracks me up the most about the whole thing is just that piece of cardboard, you know, strapped to his butt with the duct tape is just, it's so funny. And, you know, just see him running around with that thing.
It's, like, it's so cute. Oh my gosh.
It's smart though. Cause like if somebody comes at you with a switch, I mean, You're covered. You're
yep.
But it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Waddling around in it. Yeah.
He says to his dad later on, like, here, smack me. Like, and he gives him like a stick. Like, he's like, he wants him to hit. So he is prepared for all eventualities.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He shows Yusso the illustrations of Santa that he found. And he's like, the Santa that we know of, he's a hoax, he says. But Yusso isn't convinced, which, you know, makes sense because Yusso also doesn't believe in Santa Claus. So Pietari breaks out his big evidence. He took one of the scans from the office up on the mountain. This Santa sounds absolutely dire. This kid, he did a lot of research in a very short period of time. Like, this kid is going to, like, solve world hunger, I feel like, when he gets older. Because he tells Yusso that the Sami people had enough of Santa and his diet of small children. They lured him onto the ice and the ice broke. Santa fell through and couldn't get out. Once that lake froze solid. When summer came, they dug out this big block of ice and they buried it under a huge pile of rocks that became the mountain. But Yusso still doesn't believe him.
Which is such gorgeous exposition, because some movies you'll have an exposition dump and you're like, oh my God, you couldn't have worked this in a more, you know, organic way. But here it works perfectly and it's so smart and it's so creepy. Like, yeah, the Santa rules. I love that it feels like, you know, Sam's rules from Trick or Treat or the slasher rules or something. Like, it's such a play on
the Gremlins, you know,
horror
rules
of survival. Yeah. Like, it's just, I'm just obsessed with just the different ways that it plays with horror movies in ways that you're not used to.
Yeah.
Pietari has all this knowledge about the true nature of Santa, and he decides he wants to confess that they are the ones that made that hole. They went up to the mountain. But Yusso is not down with that idea, and he actually threatens him. He does not want this to come out. So he leaves. Pietari and Dad sit down for some homemade gingerbread and milk after Dad has put what appears to be a Christmas ham in the oven. And this is really where you start to see how tentative and sad their relationship is, because he really doesn't know what to say to Pietari, but he's trying to fill in that gap that his mom has left. And even Pietari's like, these gingerbread cookies are just like mom used to make. Dad's wearing that pink apron that clearly must have belonged to mom. And it's just such a heartbreaking scene. And then it gets even more heartbreaking when Pietari says, what would happen if I disappeared, if I didn't exist? Heartbreaking.
And his dad's response, he says, you should disappear. And then he pauses a second and then he says, up to bed, it's past your bedtime.
Yeah,
but that pause is so brutal.
He's very worried about Santa coming to get him, clearly, and his dad doesn't know how to have a conversation with his son. So it's just so poignant, and it feels like their loss is quite fresh. Like, it seems like this is their first Christmas without their mom. They wish each other a Merry Christmas. Pietari takes up watch at his window, but he ends up falling asleep and his head kind of bonks against the window. But what's with the keys he's holding? I originally thought, like, I'm like, is that supposed to be an alarm? Like, if he falls asleep, it wakes him up?
Yeah, like, it just, they fell too gradually to make a noise that was loud enough to wake him up. But it's actually a pretty ingenious alarm system, because it, like, unravels his sweater, but it unraveled too slowly and it just kind of softly landed, but it's really smart. It just didn't work, unfortunately.
We're back with the excavation team. Mr. Green is talking on the radio with Riley as he stands outside in the blustery night. And he's like, we're coming to pick up the cargo, but it's not ready. Mr. Green insists. He's like, it still has a pulse. He's freaking out, rightfully so. But according to Riley, who is, for all intents and purposes, it appears, his boss, he's like, if you just follow the safety instructions, you'll be just fine. But I'm with Mr. Green when he's like, fuck your safety instructions.
Right.
I love that moment because it reminded me of Scream when Stu was like, I'll be right back. So I was right. Like, oh, he's dead. Like, he's gonna, oh, yeah, God, it's so brilliant.
Exactly. Exactly. Especially because you're like, wait a minute. One of those safety instructions is to not swear. So
yeah.
Mr. Green. Like, and as he says it, we hear this kind of slicing noise around him and four hard hats bounce on the snow and he's looking around. And we just see this pair of bare legs appear in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, it's Christmas Day.
That scene is so effectively edited. It's just like, mm-hmm. It's just, you don't see anything. You just all of a sudden just see all of the hats fall to the ground. You just kind of see, it's really well done. And it's weird and scary, a little off-putting. And I don't know, just something about it. It's just sort of impeccably done.
I'm a huge fan of action horror. I don't see as much of it as I'd like to, but the editing in this movie is just perfect action horror, I think.
Mm-hmm. It made me think of Jurassic Park when like I'm like, these elves are like raptors surrounding
that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Dad is up early. He's bringing firewood in and he realizes he's burnt their Christmas breakfast. And I will say the first time I saw this, I had a really different view of the dad. I didn't have much sympathy for the dad, but watching it again, I've really come to have a lot of sympathy for him. And he's trying. He's really trying. Yeah. He's just struggling. Like
he doesn't really know how to be, you know, both father and mother to this child really at all. And that's kind of the role he has to fulfill. And I agree. I have had more empathy with him on repeat viewings than the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of why, you know, again, that's just one of the reasons why I like the movie is just his arc, you know, his growth and the fact that he's a good guy, but you don't really necessarily see that at first. He's so cold, it's because he's clueless, I think. It's because he just doesn't know how to do any of this.
And as he's loading up the fireplace, he gets blasted with this gust of wind and dust. So Pietari hears him cry out. He wakes up. He hurries downstairs. He's got his gun in his hand because he's ready. He's waiting for Santa to attack. And his dad is okay, but he's like, stay back while I check it out. It turns out Pietari had booby-trapped the fireplace. I mean, after all he's read and he's seen in those illustrations, I don't blame him. I wouldn't want Santa coming down my chimney either.
Right?
That's for sure.
He already knows he's been on the roof.
I don't understand why the dad wasn't more concerned about what set off the booby trap than the existence of the booby trap in the first place.
Exactly.
I would have been like, who or what is on my roof and why did it not want this bear trap to be up there or wolf trap or whatever it is. Like these people's lack of curiosity just astounds me because they live they're constantly under attack by wolves. Evidently they live a pretty dangerous life. So they seem very not attuned to danger for people who live in a kind of dangerous place.
That's true.
Oh. Oh, I guess I saw it as the trap was in the fireplace and it got set off when he threw the log in.
Oh.
That's what I thought happened.
Okay.
Yeah. So, because he was stoking, he was going to stoke the fire for the morning and he threw one of the pieces of firewood in and it set the trap off. That's what I thought happened.
I thought it was higher up. You're probably right. I'm always biased against the people who don't believe the kids who know what's going on. So I'm ready to be like, oh, you, but that makes total sense.
How dare you?
Right?
Yeah.
Justice for Pietari. Yeah,
there you go.
he gets his moment. He gets his moment. Yes. So dad is absolutely furious and he grounds him. Like, okay, I understand he did something wrong, but who grounds their child on Christmas?
Someone who doesn't, who's trying to figure out how to be a dad. I think that's what's happening.
Pietari heads outside to take a pee. And as he's standing there, his eyes grow wide and he shouts for his dad. His dad is a pretty, I mean, in this moment, he's prepared. He comes out with his gun to see that the bait for his pit trap is gone. Mm-hmm. So he approaches very carefully. He's telling Pietari to stay back, but he's a very inquisitive little guy. So he follows his dad to the pit. They initially think it was some kind of bird, but that changes when the dad sees a bloody hand in the trap. He's clearly disturbed, but he holds Pietari back and he's like, oh, it's just a bird. It's time for breakfast. So let's go eat. But breakfast was ruined. So they're having gingerbread for breakfast, which also I am down with having gingerbread for breakfast. Right.
On Christmas morning. Hell yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Pietari still wants to go and check out the pit once he's done eating. So his dad just gives him more gingerbread. He just has this plate piled high with gingerbread. And he really doesn't get that his dad is at this point is just trying to protect him. And he thinks that he is mad at him. So they hear someone outside and the dad yells at him, stay there, before softening a bit. And he's like, well, remember, you're grounded, so you need to stay here. We hear him talking to someone outside about a Santa gig. And somehow I don't think evil Santa would take kindly to someone impersonating him. But Pietari heads upstairs to his room so he can observe what's happening below. And he is still 100% decked out in his armor. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he takes it off from this point on.
No, I think that's right, yeah.
So looking down, he sees his dad and Santa dragging what looks like a large bag through the yard to the abattoir. And inside, they open it up to reveal a half-naked dead man. So basically, this person is just wearing a coat, like a parka. And this is what was in the pit. So fake Santa, I'm going to call him Pip. It's like Piperinen, something like that. We're going to call him Pip. He reaches into his coat pocket and he takes out a wallet. And in the wallet, there's an American passport for Brian Green. This man on the table is clearly not Brian Green. He's a lot older. He's a lot more wizened. But they don't know this because they've never actually met Brian. Pip and Dad have a bit of a squabble when Pip's like, what are you going to tell everyone? Because those wolf pits, they're illegal. And he's like, well, you're in this too, so we need to come up with a solution together. But Pietari, as mentioned, is a very inquisitive kid. He sneaks out of the house. He heads to the wolf pit, which he recklessly jumps down into. I know he's little, but he jumps into the wolf pit. And that gives me so much anxiety.
That's fair.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching that thinking, if I tried to do that, I would absolutely kill myself. Like,
yeah, 100% I would.
Obviously, I'm a little bigger than him, but yeah.
He's wearing armor.
He's good. He's wearing armor. Sure.
He's got cardboard over his butt. He's going to be all right.
Exactly. And he discovers a burlap sack, which is filled, well, which has inside it the creepiest little effigy of a child.
I know. Those things are so creepy.
They're creepy.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, if anything in this movie is going to give me nightmares, it's going to be one of those damn kids or the elf with his nostrils flaring whenever children are near.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
The dad and Pip are about to cut the corpse up into little pieces when, as the dad is holding the arm to take it to the saw, it moves. So Pip holds his shiny knife to its nose and discovers that it's still breathing.
Uh-huh.
The old man, because we can't really call it a corpse anymore, starts sniffing as it smells something delicious. So like you said, just his nostrils start like flaring. And sure enough, there is Pietari at the window looking in. So his dad sees him and Pietari runs away as his dad comes outside. He goes after him. He leaves Pip alone with the old man. And as he's driving after Pietari, he sees him wave down a cop car and get in. He's like, dad clearly doesn't get it. I'm going to the authorities. When they stop at what turns out to be Yusso's house, the cop tells the dad that he's been all around the village this morning. Some weird things have been happening. I would think that the police in this small village don't see much action, so it's no wonder this guy is exhausted. But he's like, farmers have had their potato sacks stolen, I don't know that was why that was so difficult to say, but the potatoes were left behind. Houses have had their radiators stolen overnight. Hair dryers have been taken. Mm-hmm. Very, very strange stuff happening. Pietari says he's going to go see Yuso. But his dad's like, oh, no, no, he's still sleeping. It's fine. Unfortunately, that is not the case. And this is our second glimpse of one of those creepy effigies because it has been put in Yuso's bed in his place. But the police officer's like, he's just out chasing girls. So like, he'll be back by nightfall.
Which maybe I was a strange kid. Were 12-year-olds chasing girls all day on Christmas Day? Is that like a normal thing that I'm just unaware of? Like, there have been weird petty thefts, and like there are missing children with terrifying effigies left in their beds. He's probably just out chasing girls. Like, I just, the adults in this movie boggle my mind.
Oh my gosh, no, it's kidding. True. Because also, like, he's like, we used to just put pillows under our blankets, and that, like, this is not a pillow under the blanket,
right?
Like, this is the creepiest thing you have ever seen. I can't even describe them. Like, it looks like they're made of like vines and like twigs and stuff with then like straw for hair or something. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the television show Salem, but it looks like something that would be on Salem. Like, it's clearly like, you know, evil folklore or, you know, satanic rites are happening. Like, you would look at this doll and shriek and jump back and think it is possessed. Like, just one glance at this mm-hmm. doll and you're like, yes. No, get away. So I don't understand why they're all so chill about it.
They really are. It's true.
Pietari tries to convince them that they're wrong. But of course, no one listens to the little kid. Our friend Pip is still babysitting meanwhile, and he's looking at the old devil, as he calls him. And apparently the old devil is a little ripe, and he's like, he could use a soak in the tub. But the smell doesn't deter Pip from eating some gingerbread right next to him. And like the smell of children, the smell of gingerbread is enticing to the creature on the table. He sees his nostrils go on high alert, and Pip holds the cookie to his nose before snatching it back. And he's a bit of a jerk. Like, he's just teasing the guy with the gingerbread. The old man tries to talk. Pip leans closer, which just seems like a bad idea. And sure enough, just before cutting to the next scene, we see the creature lift its head quickly towards Pip. He does survive the attack, but he suffers a very bloody bite to the ear.
Yeah.
Just blood everywhere. Yuso's dad is returned with Pietari and his dad, and they need him to translate for this so-called Brian Green, because they're under the impression that Brian Green is an American and will understand English. Pietari is concerned about his friend, but Pip is more concerned about the man they've captured. So when they go into the abattoir, Brian is sitting naked on a pallet at the other end of the room. Pip says there's something strange about him, and Yuso's dad says he's a foreigner. Like, of course there's something strange about him.
All Americans are like that. What are you talking about?
But I mean, it actually makes it, like, it's very funny. Like, I laughed really hard, but I'm like, actually, like, this is such an insular community that any foreigner would mm-hmm. seem strange to them, I'm sure. And mm-hmm. in fact, like, I would think that maybe even people from, like, you know, a big city in Finland would seem strange to them because they have a very specific way of life. And it looks like a very small community. Like, I don't know how many people, what the population of the city is, but or the village, but it can't be very large. Pietari's dad urges Yuso Sr. to go talk to him, and he approaches cautiously, gun in hand, but the man doesn't respond. He just sits there silently naked, Santa hat at his feet. I will say that some of the things that I wrote as I was writing the plot my plot notes are some of the weirdest things that I've ever written.
Yeah.
I know. Silently naked, Santa hat at his feet.
I love that writing, though. Like, that phrase is just perfect.
So he comes closer, he pokes him with a stick, but he's like, meh, he's harmless. Well, I'll tell that to Pip's ear. He's clearly not.
Right.
They continue to question him. They want to know more about the work on the mountain, but then they decide, oh, we're going to hold him ransom so we can get back the money that we lost. Meanwhile, in the house, Pietari has made a list of his friends and is methodically calling them all, but none of them are home.
Mm-hmm.
Just gets worse and worse for poor Pietari. So talking to him isn't working. So it's time for Plan B. But Plan B is interrupted when Pietari comes banging on the door. And this certainly perks up Brian. And that shot of him slowly turning his head to look towards Pietari, incredible. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's just this close-up of his head, and he is creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that actor is amazing. Like, he does so much with just, like, I want to say body language, but he doesn't even move. Like, not even moving, but just with his eyes, and God, it's so good. And mm-hmm. I wanted to mention, they drop in such cool character moments, because that list of names that Pietari has, it looks like it's like five or six boys' names, and the very last name is a girl's name, and her name is the only one in all caps. And I think that's so interesting. Like, they just drop in these little nuggets. Like, we never see this girl, you know, presumably she's one of the kids, you know, spoiler alert, at the end in the sacks. But, you know, we never actually see her as a character, but it just the significance of that to me, of saving her for last and her being in all caps. I just love that tiny, subtle moment.
Maybe if Pietari wasn't so worried about evil Santa, he would be out chasing that girl that day.
Exactly, like all young boys do on Christmas Day.
Christmas Day, apparently, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. His dad comes out and Pietari gives him a stick. So we mentioned this earlier, and he's like, you need to smack me because I've been naughty. And he's so serious. He tells him that he and Yusso are responsible for the hole in the fence. And he's the only one. He's like, I'm the only one left. Like, you need to punish me. I've been naughty. Which makes me think of Silent Night, Deadly Night. Punish.
Punish.
So Pip comes out, he calls the dad back in because their hostage is up to something. He even bit the stick in half. So this guy's dental hygiene must be on point. Mm-hmm. The rest of his hygiene, not so much. But like, I'm wondering if these elves have hooked up with Hermie, the dentist elf from Rudolph.
Yes. Brilliant.
Yes, for sure.
Because if you bite through a stick,
mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. Pietari enters the slaughterhouse, and again, that hostage turns slowly towards him, and he stands up from his crouch. So the men realize that the hostage is reacting to his presence, but his dad thinks it's because they must know each other from somewhere. And he's like, I want to know who he is. Like, what's going on? Who is this guy? And Pietari's like, it's Santa Claus.
And he drags his young son up to this dirty naked man who can bite through anything, and is like, hey,
that's right.
Talk to my son for a minute. I just, you know, Father of the Year award just for that moment.
Right. Yeah.
Like, get real close to him, son. Like,
mm-hmm. Okay. Santa moves in this very like predatory manner. Like, he's kind of cat-like, as if he's about to attack. And even Yusso's dad speaks to him as if he's an animal. He's like, down boy in English, because he's the one, as we said, that couldn't speak English. Mm-hmm. But he's not afraid. He is not responding to their commands. So Yusso Sr. fires at him, and that allows them to tie him up. So they then sit, all four of them. So there's Pip, the dad, Yusso Sr., and Pietari sitting watching Santa as he swings from his chain position, and they all eat gingerbread. Mm-hmm. It's such a bizarre little moment, but it's fantastic.
It's so good. That's one of my favorite parts. It's sort of that shot, you know, of him just staring at that chain. And,
and he just very slowly sways while he glares at them. Love it.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, the head tilted slightly down, like the glare is intense. Inside Brian Greene's jacket, the radio goes off, and it's Riley saying they're going to be landing in 5 minutes. So Pietari's dad answers, and he's like, we have Santa Claus. And they realize that this is their chance to really make some money. So mm-hmm. even though Santa is chained up, he's dangling from the ceiling, he's still very menacing, and he has this absolute malevolent look on his face. If they're going to deliver Santa, he needs to look the part. So they drive a caged and now appropriately attired Santa to meet up with Riley and the extraction team.
God, I love that sentence.
You know, it's like when you lay it, when you explain it, it's like, this is just wacky, isn't it? This is the weirdest, wackiest, most bonkers thing.
Oh my gosh.
But it really is. I mean, it's just, when I'm watching it, I'm thinking, this is logical. But then, you know, as we talk about it, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Pardon me, you know. But
exactly. So good.
Anyway.
So good. And I don't appreciate how funny it is until we talk about it in isolation like that. Like, they dress right. up the naked mm-hmm. man and put him in a cage and haul him off to the extraction team. Like, when I'm watching it, I'm not laughing. I'm just kind of like in it. But when you talk about it later, it's just the funniest damn movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is. It's so true. I can't imagine seeing this movie with a crowd. I think seeing this at some sort of repertory theater on a big screen with a crowd would play like gangbusters, mm-hmm. you know, especially when we're getting towards the climax here, where it really turns, you talk about horror action,
yes.
you know, that by the end of this movie, I mean, this is like a full on diehard action movie.
It is. Absolutely. I love it.
So anyway, but I'm getting a little ahead of us, but you know, this it's just like, I think the humor would come through so much more in that setting, you know, where you have a crowd, you know, sitting and watching it.
Pip wants them to dream bigger. He's like, let's go for more than the $85,000 we lost. And so they pull up to the meeting spot. They leave Pietari in the truck with Santa still caged up in the back. And once the helicopter is about to land, Yusso Sr. finds his wife's hairdryer. Weird, just on a random street. That's okay. Whatever. And then Riley gets out of the helicopter. He approaches the three men. He's very surprised to see them because he's expecting Brian Greene, even though he didn't speak to Brian Greene earlier. And Yusso's dad gets down to brass tacks. He's like, we want $85,000. He decides they're going to stick with, between Pietari's dad and Yusso's dad, they decide they're going to stick with the $85,000. So Santa in a cage on a dolly is not something I ever thought I'd see, but here we are. It's so good.
Yeah.
Riley is absolutely mesmerized as he stands in front of that cage. Pietari, meanwhile, has also left the truck, and he stands in front of Building 24, a.k.a. the last door. So he puts his stuffy down. He's not going to bring him into Building 24, Hangar 24, and he heads towards the door while Riley, leaning towards Santa's eyes, sees his eyes kind of glow. Rightfully so, this startles him, and he scrambles. He tells the men to put down their weapons and smile because it is time for them to be on their best behavior. This isn't Santa. It's actually one of his elves, which if this is one of the elves, how scary is Santa?
Yes.
My jaw dropped. I was like, oh no, you thought you met the big bad, like the big boss, the final boss, I should say. Mm-hmm. And then, no, this is just one of the little minions that jumps around and gets in your way for a while. Oh God. I was like, that one, that part really got me.
Yes.
So the lights suddenly go out and Riley says he's going to find out who's naughty and nice. And I defy you not to burst into song at this moment. Things quickly go from bad to worse as some of Riley's cohorts are snatched suddenly and dragged away. And the men start to notice these elves surrounding them. Riley observes that they're protecting their master just before one of the elves throws a hatchet at him, lodging it right in the top of his head. So the men start shooting before taking refuge in Hangar 24, where they see Pietari standing, looking up at this massive block of ice that has two curved horns protruding from it. So here's why the radiators and hair dryers were stolen. The elves are defrosting Santa.
That phrase. There you go. That phrase. The elves are defrosting Santa.
Yeah. And that turn of phrase is from the movie. That's not from me. I didn't say that.
Yep.
It is a very big job. And then we see children crying. We see the potato sacks that were stolen wiggling. So all the kids from the village are here, all six of them, and they're about to get smacked. Yuso's dad goes searching for Yuso, and the elves start trying to get into the building. So it's time to barricade the doors, turn off all the heat. Yuso's reunited with his father, and it turns out he's not so grown up after all. Like, he is so relieved, and he wants his dad, and it's a nice little moment. He's still a little boy. Like, he really is. The ice begins to crack, but no one seems to notice. And Pietari looks up and notices that the roof is open. So he's trying to get the men's attention, but they're all so wrapped up in what they're doing that he has to resort to gunfire. This kid is going places. I'm telling you. I know I've said it a few times, but he
like he's been the hero the whole time. But when he takes over by, you know, and like blowing a shot, like, yeah, everybody listen up. Like, oh God, I was firmly on Team Pietari from then on.
Yeah.
So he realizes that the elves won't leave if the kids are still there. So he is ready to take down Santa. And his line, "It's me or Santa," I suggest Santa, as he takes a tarp off of crates of explosives. It is pure action hero. Like,
totally. Yes.
Like, Bruce Willis couldn't, in like the 80s, couldn't have delivered that line better.
Exactly.
Poor Pip is sent out with gingerbread as a distraction, but it works. He tosses it to the elves as he makes his way to the helicopter. And much like me, if someone tosses me a cookie, they get distracted. So they put the sack kids in a net. I mean, that's what they do. Like, and they're still in the sacks. You're like,
absolutely correct. Yes, that's exactly what happens.
And Pietari hangs onto the net as Pip pulls it up with the helicopter. And Pietari's a little reckless on his helicopter ride. He sometimes is holding on with only one hand. And I'm like, hold on with both hands, kid.
Yeah.
But I should have faith in him because clearly, like I said, he's an action hero.
He has to have his gun hand free just in case.
It's true. The kids are being flown away, and the two dads that are left behind are drilling holes into the ice, and they're filling them with dynamite. Mm-hmm. The elves, however, still have their eyes on the prize, and they're following the helicopter, which is now kind of hovering in the sky. There are so many elves, which we'll later find out. I think it's like 198 elves. And it's time to lure them to the reindeer pen. So this is Pietari's plan. The fact that he came up with this on the fly, and it takes me hours to decide what I'm going to have for dinner, and then I still end up with chicken nuggets.
Yeah, I want Pietari to be my life coach. I'm not kidding.
Right? Yeah. The dynamite is set, so it's time to take their trophy. And the two dads saw off one of Santa's horns, which... normally, I'm not a fan of trophy hunting, but this is the exception to the rule. I feel like they've earned this.
Yeah.
But there's a slight kink in the plan. The gates to the reindeer pens are closed. So Pietari's like, I'm going to head down there to open them. But Pip's like, I can't bring you back up. Like, you can't go down. He is like a little Finnish Rambo. He's like, I'm not coming back up. He says, before he climbs down, he kind of hops onto a nearby tower and climbs down. Opens the gates just in time to see a horde of elves running towards him. And the music swells as he prepares to make his sacrifice. And he's like, tell dad what I did. Breaks my heart. Mm-hmm. The two dads are driving away. And as Yuso's dad says, have a Merry Christmas and Happy Bloody New Year, they detonate the dynamite. The whole building blows up. Rest in peace, Santa.
See you in hell, Père Noël.
Yes.
Brilliant. It is a Christmas miracle. The elves are out of a job. They no longer have a purpose. So they're just kind of like lost. Like, they're like, I don't know what to do anymore. So Pietari is saved. And he tells Pip, it's time to take the kids home. It's bedtime.
Just one-liner after one-liner with these kids. Oh my God.
Yeah.
The next day, the sun peaks over the mountains. They're all reunited at this makeshift elf pen. This is where his dad says, you're quite a man. Mm-hmm. Not in a flirtatious manner.
So sorry for that.
No. I didn't think it came out that way at all. And then you said it and I was like, well, that's funny. So they calculate that one of these elves, they could sell for $85,000. So 198 of them are worth $16,800,000. But don't forget that 22% VAT. So Pietari saved Christmas.
Yay.
But wait, there's more, because now it's 312 days until Christmas and we see the elves getting cleaned up in a communal shower. There is a lot of male nudity in this movie.
There is. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a movie with more male nudity than this. Then we flash forward to 76 days before Christmas. They're being taught how to deal with kids. They're kind of on this like assembly line. So they have these like effigies that aren't scary. They're just kind of these plain white, like ragdoll kind of things. Mm-hmm. And they're giving them presents. They're like caressing them. and like they have Pietari and his dad going by on like a little like dolly kind of thing. And they're demonstrating, this is what you do. Like, it is literally an assembly line of Santa Clauses. And when they get it right, they get their Santa hats. So life seems much better for the elves now than under the rule of evil Santa Claus. They seem happier. They're cleaner. They're better fed. Like they're not scrawny anymore. So, you know, they're doing okay. So then it's 24 days before Christmas and they get crated and sent out as rare exports worldwide. So the movie ends. We see the title and their absolutely adorable logo, which is a hexagon with a little Santa icon inside it from the land of the original Santa Claus.
Yeah, that ending is so dark because what we have been experiencing through the whole movie is this big corporation exploiting the environment and destroying the environment for gain and for, you know, not caring what happens and to the people, the farmers and whomever else. And then at the end, the farmers are doing exactly the same thing. They're exploiting these wild creatures, taming them, making them docile. But if one of them, who knows what happens when one of them is in city, you know, as a Santa Claus in a mall somewhere. You know, can you imagine if one of them just kind of, you know, I mean, wild animals are wild animals, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and they sometimes just, you know, go back to their wild ways, you know, in the blink of an eye. We hear stories like that sometimes, you know, and so I find this ending sort of like they have become, you know, what they were fighting against through so much of the rest of the movie. And it's so dark and but it's just this darkly satirical, funny, bizarre, perfect ending though. To me.
Exactly. And because they're crated up, who knows how long it's going to take them to get to some of these countries. Because I think one of them is like, one of them is going to Zanzibar in a crate. Like how hungry will he be when he gets there? And what will he do with that hunger? Like I'm obsessed with what happens when they're let loose. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not one who often calls for sequels if they're not merited, but I would love to see a sequel of, you know, what happens to Zanzibar Santa? What happens to Australia Santa? Like these hungry elves with their, you know, centuries long appetite for children being unleashed in a new country without their handlers. Whew, God.
This ending leaves me wanting so much more. I gotta tell you. I mean, this is one of those movies where it's just like, oh, and I love it when a movie does that though.
Yes.
You know, because it's just where you're just like wishing there was more to the movie, you know, that is so much better than saying to yourself, oh, they could have cut out 20 minutes, you know, you know, I much prefer that. So it's just this ending is absolute perfection for me. I think it's just so it sort of drives home the point of the rest of the movie, but also undermines it at the same time. And it's just kind of brilliant in that way. And I just love that. It's one of the stronger endings I don't know that I can think of off the top of my head right now of this sort of thing. So, man, I love it. Love that ending.
Absolutely.
Wow, I did not see it that way at all. And now I'm like so sad for the elves. Like, oh no, it wasn't better for them. I'm going to have a hard time sleeping tonight.
Oh no.
I think that's kind of the point. Right? You know, the whole idea of some fairy tales are real, you know, that's a great one from the movie too. Yes. You know, gosh, I love that, you know, idea of taking, because, you know, so many fairy tales and stories and things like that have been so tamed over time. You know, we kind of live in a time where, you know, we're afraid to scare children. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the things that's great about like 80s horror movies. There's so much like children centric horror that's genuinely frightening. You know, PG rated movies like Gremlins and Ghostbusters that have genuinely scary moments in them, or Poltergeist,
or like dark, you know, moments,
things like that. You know, child endangerment, you know, happening in these movies.
Dads dying in chimneys, like that.
Oh,
like,
gosh, the Gremlins story. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. So I think that, you know, I understand sort of the call to sort of soften the edges off of stories for children to make them more palatable. But at the same time, it's like, is that a disservice in some way too? You know, I mean, should we have a healthy fear of certain things, you know, from when we are children?
Exactly.
And it's just an interesting conundrum to kind of ponder over, I guess. Anyway, that's one of my big takeaways from this movie.
That's one of my biggest soapboxes is, like, it sounds sadistic, but we need to start scaring kids again, because
kids, I totally agree.
Yeah, like, kids know how scary and sad the world is. People don't give kids nearly enough credit. Like, kids know. They know better than a lot of adults. So they need media and art that can help them deal with that and help them deal with those feelings and work through them, and media that is honest to them, art that is honest with them about, the world's scary. Sad things happen, bad things happen, terrible things happen. So I'm all about not lying to kids and not selling them short, basically. So I'm 100% with you on that.
Well, it's funny. We sort of blame Disney for cutting the edges off, but at the same time, watch the earliest Disney animated features. You know, Snow White, Fantasia, and Pinocchio all have terrifying elements to them. And I think those are actually probably, you know, like the Disney true masterpieces, frankly. You know, I mean, when you have a bunch of kids turning into donkeys, that's werewolves again, you know, I mean, that's that whole idea. And, you know, the Night on Bald Mountain sequence of Fantasia is brilliant and it's so terrifying, you know? And so I think, you know, or some like the Wizard of Oz and the Flying Monkeys, you have these elements that, at certain times where it was like, children can take it. They know how scary the world is. Let's prepare them in some way. I mean, not traumatize them, but you know, give them a good, healthy scare. There's nothing wrong with that. And I appreciated that sort of came back in the 80s, and I'd like to see it maybe come back again.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Like, you're not going to show a kid Martyrs, but like,
no.
You know, there's like, there is, you know, I 100% agree that kids need to learn how to cope with fear and grief and trauma in ways that are healthy. And if you talk to so many horror fans, that they'll tell you that that's how they deal with trauma or how they deal with anxiety. Or I can tell you, the last 2 years, which have been, I'm sure for a lot of people, some of the toughest times that we've been through, I've watched more horror movies than I have in my entire life. And I've been a horror fan since my early teens. Right. So like, that speaks to the ability of horror to like help you through trauma and anxiety and uncertain times. Like it, like, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that, but
no, I think you're right on with that. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I agree completely. I've done the same thing, like for multiple reasons, but like, you know, I've been seeking out more movies about grief because I lost my dad almost a year ago now, which I can't believe. But yeah, like just things that, but it doesn't have to be if you lost someone, like everyone has been through a traumatic experience with what we've all gone through. So, I mean, horror does help you deal with that. And I think horror helping kids deal with that is important because God knows what kids are going through right now. I can't imagine your childhood being taken up by something like this. So, you know, yeah. I mean, obviously, Brian, you see that more than I would, you know, being a teacher and having children. So,
yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of anxiety and I teach mostly very young children. I do kindergarten through second grade is my focus. That's almost exclusively the ages that I work with. And those kindergartners are behind. From where kindergartners have been before the pandemic, you know, they don't know how to deal with this. They don't know how to be in school. They don't know how to express their emotions in a healthy way. Very often, the beginning of the year was rough, really, really rough. I mean, I had a little guy having an absolute screaming fit on his first day of class because I was just a stupid old man who wasn't his teacher and he was afraid of me. And that's what it came down to. Now he's like, you know, he actually says, that he loves my class and, you know, he's so happy to come and he's just the sweetest little guy now, but he was scared is what it came down to. And, you know, that, that was a rough week, you know. but I'm so glad that I, you know, after, you know, hindsight is 20/20, as they say. So you look at this and you go, he was afraid. And I understand that because we've all been very afraid, you know, over the past, you know, 2 years or so, for lots of different reasons, not just COVID. There have been lots of things that have been terrifying, you know, even this last Friday, it's Saturday. So, yesterday, there was this nationwide fear. I don't know if it got up into Canada too or not.
It did. Okay. I heard of it. I don't think it like was considered a thing up here.
No. Well, I mean, there was this, this something of a panic, that, there was a TikTok challenge that, you know, Friday this week was National Shoot Up Your School Day or whatever. We got an email from our district that, you know, it was encouraging kids to bring weapons to school. They didn't use the same language there, as I heard later. But these are just the kinds of things that, I mean, they were fairly unsubstantiated threats and, you know, but those kinds of things are just scary. You know, who, you know, 99% of kids are not going to, are not going to take that seriously. But, you know, that little tiny sliver of some kid that might, you know, that's the scary thing, you know, and that's just a very, you know, raw and recent example, but there, it's just, we've lived in, these are the times we live in and they're frightening, to adults, but also to children. But I think it's also a chance for children to show their bravery like Pietari does in this movie and show, you know, how resilient and strong children really are, you know, and how smart they really are and how, you know, not just intellectually, but also just in the sense of, I don't know, social ability or something, you know, the abilities to step up if they need to. I think that's one of the things that, you know, is a sort of a beautiful illustration of this movie is the Pietari just taking the initiative when he needs to. He's like, you know, he's prepared, he's ready. He steps up when he sees that he's the only one that can take charge. And it's wonderful.
And he never backs down. Like, he never lets anybody else and their opinions sway him. Like, he's never like, oh, you know what? Maybe I am wrong. Yusuf's telling me that this isn't happening. My dad's like getting mad at me for these things. He's like, no, I know I'm right. I know that I need to help my family and my friends and protect them. Hmm. And he like holds his ground.
Yeah. And he becomes what they want him to be, but in his own way. He becomes brave and strong and a leader, which is what they wanted from him, but they wanted it in their way. He becomes that in his way, which is so important.
Anything else about Rare Exports that you want to discuss?
Can I read just a little tiny thing that I wrote?
Of course, always.
Just a little bit. And this is sort of my, sort of bringing it back to the fun, okay? It said, Rare Exports never loses sight of its main reason for existing, to entertain. The film is filled with action, humor, mystery, chills, and even a little gore. There's a harrowing helicopter chase, explosions, and vicious naked old men with farm implements and a fixation for gingerbread cookies. In other words, what's not to like? This
exactly. That
sums it up. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
This movie, it comes down to it, is just so enjoyable. You know, I mean, yeah, you can watch this movie and try and dig into some of the deeper stuff we talked about in this last little bit here, or you can just sit back and go for the ride and have a blast. And either way, you're going to have a good time, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, it's exactly. It's just, it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So body count, it's a little tough. We know 6 for sure, probably. Well, definitely more, because we have the 4 workers at the beginning. We have Brian Green, we have Riley, and then we also have the people that are with Riley when they have their little meetup with the elf. I think there's like 2 or 3. So let's say, I'm going to say there's probably about 8 or 9 people who are killed, a whole lot of reindeer.
And one Santa.
And one Santa, that's right, yeah. I didn't count Santa.
You're on the naughty list. Sorry.
You're on the naughty list.
I am. Oh, no.
You know, and that's one of the criticisms I think I read, you know, when I wrote about this, is something in the comments like, you never even see the Santa at the end. It's like, well, would it be possible? Could it possibly be as good as what you build up in your mind? I think, you know, having the elf be so vicious, and then the just imagining Santa being that to the nth degree is so much more effective than actually showing the thing, you know.
Exactly.
If you want to see that, you know, watch Krampus, which is terrific, and you know, you can see that movie, see him in action there, you know, because it's kind of what they're implying this Santa is something like along the lines of Krampus, right?
Right.
All right, so if you had to rate it on a scale of 1 through 5 in Scaredy Cat Screams, what would you give Rare Exports?
I'm trying to remember what I've rated other movies, because I try to be consistent. Like, if Suspiria is a 5 and X movie is a 3, what is this? But I can't remember, so I'm just going to say I will give it a 4.5.
Yeah, I was going to give it a 4, so yeah.
Nice. Excellent. It is a good holiday movie. It has definitely been added to my holiday repertoire. So thank you for the recommendation, Brian.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Glad if I could turn just a few people on to this movie, I'm like, that's very exciting. You know, whenever there's a movie that's just a lot of fun like this, or, you know, Night of the Creeps or something else that people sort of decide that they want to watch because I threw it out there. I love that. So
right, that's the best feeling in the world.
Oh, it's huge. It's so huge. Yeah.
All right. So tell us where we can find you.
I am on Twitter at We Who Walk Here. I write for Film Cred and Manor Vellum, Daily Grindhouse, Nightmarish Conjurings, so Ghouls Magazine, and I've got a piece in Hear Us Scream out. You can get it on Barnes & Noble or Amazon or anywhere you get books. But yeah, come say hi to me at We Who Walk Here. Let me recommend some horror movies to you or recommend some to me. So yeah, let's just talk horror.
And you can find me at Brian D. Kuiper on Twitter. You can also listen to the podcast I do with Michelle Egan, Movies for Life. And you can find that show at Movie Life Pod. I mostly am writing right now for Bloody Disgusting and Manor Vellum. I have a piece coming soon to Certified Forgotten, which I'm excited about. And then, yeah, a few other things in the work. I've talked to Jessica a little bit about, trying to get involved with Film Cred. I'd love to join in there. It's, you know, I'm working up, trying to get some things done. And then I want to contact, the folks over there. So I,
excellent.
Great place to be. Yeah. So that's mostly where I am right now.
Awesome. I am going to do my Christmas baking and listen to the most recent Movies for Life episode on Monday afternoon. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, we're hoping to have the part two of that one available, the part on It's a Wonderful Life available by Monday. So
perfect.
Yeah,
I can do so a double feature.
You might have the whole shebang of that episode.
Excellent. I have a lot of baking to do, so.
Excellent. It's a long episode. So
fantastic. Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today. You can catch us on Twitter at @CatScaredy and on Instagram at @ScaredyCats the podcast. Somehow after doing this for a year and a half, I still can never remember my Twitter or Instagram handles. So I still have to look to my notes and be like, oh, right, that's what that is. So subscribe wherever you find podcasts and don't forget to let us know what you think by leaving us a review. So until next time, stay scared.